Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
How are you feeling today? Because we had a little moment there where I thought you were reading the questions, whereas you were actually just...
I was completely zoned out.
Staring blankly at this. Is this because you stayed up till 1 o'clock playing Zelda?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so opening question on this week's podcast comes from Daniel Robinson. Daniel_Robson, sorry. Daniel_Robson98. Asks via Twitter, would you become a vegan if that meant Liverpool would win the league? So no ham rolls.
Damn, that's a tough question.
Mm. Here's the thing for me. Being a vegan must be boss.
No.
No, but it must be.
No. No. Because you get the moral high grounds.
Well, exactly. No, but because I've never known a group of people be more preachy about a thing that they do. You know, and I'm a Liverpool fan. You know what I mean? And so, you know, to have a group of people who are so bang on about it so much, you must feel like frigging Superman if you stop eating eggs and stuff. I don't know. Not for me. Like,
they're just reinforcing. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it's like when you've got kids and you it's amazing. Go, oh, you want to try kids, get married, all these things. And then you go,
yes, you now know my pain. Yeah, I mean, so... Are Liverpool never going to win the league again unless I become a vegan?
Well, let's have that, yeah.
Because Liverpool and my family are the two most important things in my life that I can when I consider it. Mm-hmm. But meat, when it's brought into question, it's the triforce.
Meat is part of your family in some regards. I never got quite so much joy as opening a Payjack fridge,
yeah,
and seeing the culinary delights, yeah, that await inside.
Amazing,
we do fridges very differently, you and I. But yeah, ultimately, I really want to see Liverpool win a league title. So I would happily become a vegan. I just would hope I wouldn't become an absolute prick as a result. I'm not saying all vegans are pricks, by the way. But the same way that but vegans are to food what atheists are to religion.
Mm.
It's like, just wind it in, enjoy life. Just we get it. No God, we get it. You feel a bit better when you're not killing animals. Just crack on.
I don't know if I could give up a rare steak.
Yeah, for the league title, Chris.
I don't think so. You know,
I've waited. Here's the thing. I have meat every single day. I haven't had a league title in 27 years.
Yeah.
I'm hungry for the league title. I could go. I've had 34 years of meat. Of the 34 years I've only had, what, therefore 7 years of Liverpool having league titles and whatever. So
I'm going no. I'm going, I'm not going vegan.
That's disgusting.
It's not.
It's just not how you feel.
Look, a league title comes around once a year. I'm missing out on a potential 900 plus meat meals per year. You know what I mean? When you weight it like that, it's a big difference.
I could maybe go veggie. I'd be more inclined to go veggie. It's not even the meat. I could, you know, it's fine. It's all the other stuff that you're not allowed to have. Like I say, if you're telling me I can't have a dippy egg and soldiers, you know what I mean? It's one of life's rare treats. Steak's fine. Like
bacon and steaks, man, that's what it's about. That's a man's food.
Okay, so now that we've lost all credibility with every diehard Liverpool fan in the world, let's crack on with the podcast. Always let us know your thoughts on the things.
I might start a meat podcast.
I genuinely believe a Chris Pajak-led food podcast stroke channel would be an absolute revelation. I think people would love to see that. Just considering how many food related questions we get
yeah.
for asked via Twitter. Okay, so We're going to have some more of your questions later on the pod. If you're watching this on the redbentv.com, which you can watch the full video experience of this, which is an extended thing. We will be answering normal questions, plus we do a few extra because we love our subscribers.
What? We forgot the thing. The prop.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even write it into the agenda. Let's do it next week. It's fine.
No, we need to do it this week. Okay. We've got to do it this week. We'll have a little pause.
Speak Out, is it called?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's not called Speak Out. It's called the JAG version of Speak Out that the entertainer sell for £2, which I've got. But that's upstairs. We will pause to go and collect that. We'll do that a bit later on. But we won't, because we've not prepared for
we
it.
We will. We'll just pause and we'll just do it. It doesn't have to be a 30-second pause. We can be 5 minutes while we just go and sort it out. Like,
okay,
it's worth doing. I think it's worth doing.
Okay, we'll do one for the people listening, and we'll do, because I'm not sure. All right, we'll work it out. It'll be fine. Stay tuned. You never know where this podcast is going to go. I never know. If we don't know, you've got no fucking clue. So
it's not easy to drink out of.
Let's talk Liverpool. Yeah. So Chris has gone for. We have. I mean, we sold our stash of Red Men mugs. They're gone now. But we do have the office supply. And there are a couple of mugs kicking around. You've gone for the two plastic cups.
Yeah, I didn't want to do any washing up.
Or use an Everton mug. I had no qualms about this the other week, as people will have noticed. Anyway, so we don't need too much on Burnley because it's quite a long time ago now. But just before we move on to Man City, for me anyway, it was, and I guess this will be borne out when we play the likes of some more relegation and battle teams between now and the end of the season. But it did feel good, if only temporarily, whatever, to break this lesser team hoodoo, as it were. Particularly Burnley, you know, they almost laid the groundwork for how to do it against Liverpool at the start of the season. It's been hanging over us. Good to get a win against them.
Yeah, of course it was good to get a win against them. But I think, you know, had we been beaten by one of the top six sides or a couple of the top six sides this season, mm-hmm. I don't think as much would have been made about it.
Yeah.
You know.
There's such a split.
Because there's such a split, yeah. I think, you know, there's times when we've absolutely dicked Hull.
Yeah.
We've absolutely dicked Stoke.
Yeah.
We beat Middlesbrough 3-0.
Yeah.
You know, there's teams this season that we've beaten convincingly for it not to have been a mad thing because, you know, we've won more games against teams from below the top six than we've lost.
Yeah.
And yet it was blown up out of all proportion. We were in a bad run of form.
Yeah.
That was the major concern. Mm-hmm. And we have some serious weaknesses.
Yeah.
And I think the teams lower down the league are more willing to change their game plan to suit that, whereas I think the teams further up the league have a bit more confidence in themselves, rightly or wrongly, to go toe-to-toe with Liverpool.
Yeah.
But regardless, just for the social media and the press and all that, it's still good to get that off your back.
It's an easy story, isn't it? I think, actually, to be fair, and again, this is why I'm kind of, I'm not, you can't have cast iron answers in football at all unless you are just an absolute, I mean, Chelsea have kind of got it at the moment. They look unstoppable, don't they? Whereas if you're not that team, there's got to be constant questions asked of you, and you're not going to get everything right week in, week out. But I don't think Burnley are necessarily that. You know, because they're not a relegation and battle team. You know, they are very much. They are actually now the type of team that we do all right against. I think where it's come from is it's losing to Swansea, it's drawing to Sunderland, it's those kind of things. It's the teams that are. We're actually genuinely weirdly bad against the teams that are in the bottom five or six in the Premier League, which I still think we'll mentally need to overcome, but. Particularly given the way that we went from, you know, we went a goal behind, which is shit, but the way that we recovered from that to go and get the win, if nothing else, it should be. If this was like the first half of the season, we'd be going, wow, that's a really good thing we've done there. We've overcome that. That was a bit of adversity. Yeah, maybe a bit made by ourselves, whatever, but that's something that improved the squad. Whereas it's weird that now we're kind of like, well, let's do it.
You know, early on in the season when we did it to Swansea, we said exactly the same thing. You know, we went 1-0 down, we were playing terribly against Swansea, and we come back with a 20-minute spell. That was the difference with the Swansea one early in the season. I think we beat them 2-1. We had a 20-minute spell where we were exceptional. The difference this time is we didn't have that 20-minute spell. We played shit the whole game and still managed to win the game.
yeah, absolutely. So moving on then to the weekend, Manchester City looming.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the nature of where we are right now, isn't it? You know, it's thick and fast now. 10 games left to play. There are no longer any more games. You're thinking, oh well, you know, fine, we'll just get through this and what have you. You can't go into these games expecting a win, and even though we've got good form, generally speaking, against Man City, the Etihad's still very, very difficult. I think a lot of that's been glossed over because we were sensational last year, but we only won there twice in the last 10 years, one of them being last season. So, you know, it's going to be a massive game, which I know goes without saying to some extent.
Of course it is. You know, I was pulling some stats together for the build-up show for later on this week, and Klopp's got more wins against Pep Guardiola than any other manager in the world.
Wow.
So he's got 5 wins against Pep Guardiola, which is better than anybody. So, you know, there are things, and, you know, Manchester City have struggled against us recently in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they beat us in a cup final and stuff like that. But, you know, we responded really well that week, didn't we, by going and snotting them 3-0 at Anfield. So you're right, though, it's going to be a very difficult game. They have slowly managed to get themselves out of... they were talked about as, are they going to get top 4? And now they're not. Yeah. Even though they're a point ahead of us, admittedly, with the game in hand. So they're a good side. I think they've still got probably, if not the best, certainly the second best squad in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Look, they've got some quality players, mate.
They're unbelievable. And it's so telling about them that, you know, 3 weeks ago, whatever, we were saying, oh, Sergio Aguero looks like he's on the out. It's Gabriel Jesus is the one, and then now Gabriel Jesus is being pictured driving a mobility scooter around the Trafford Centre looking rather forlorn, and Sergio Aguero's back in and banging goals in, and all of a sudden Leroy Sané, who has been able to do they've done that the right way. That's what's the beauty of what Man City have got going for them that we really struggle with, is they've brought him in, they spent big money on him in the summer, loads of expectation on him because he looks so promising in Germany. But no one's talked about him all year. He's just been able to come in, get some games, get some experience, and actually now he's starting to influence matches. He's starting to score important
probably
goals.
Probably since the turn of the year, to be fair to him. He's, you know, some great assists. It's his skill, his trickery, his ability to beat a man, and, you know, getting goals as well. And, you know, as a player that I think Nathaniel Klein's got to really watch his back this game, because he'll be over probably on that side. You've got Sterling on Milner on the other. You know, admittedly, Milner did well against Sterling the last time out. Whether the game's going to be quite the same, I'm not 100% sure, but certainly our fullbacks are going to have a torrid, torrid time. And you've got to say, you fancy Sergio Aguero to score against anybody, or at least I do.
Yeah.
You know, every time he picks the ball up, that's the difference right now between us and them, is that they've got a goal scorer, and I don't think we've got a goal scorer.
Well, look, you just got to look back to the game of the Etihad last year, which we were privileged enough to go to. It was one of the best times of my life, going to that game. That first half an hour,
brilliant,
was just incredible. I couldn't believe we just kept scoring. But just Aguero, you saw in that game what he does. He's just dangerous. I mean, this is a soft analysis, because he's been the best striker in the Premier League now for what, 4-5 years or whatever.
He's the only player to score 10 plus goals in 6 seasons of the Premier League in a row. The closest to that was Alan Shearer, who did 5 seasons of 10 plus goals. Yeah, so you know you've seen that dangerousness that you've talked about, but also the consistency of him. And in a season where he's actually been, you know, lambasted from some quarters, and, you know, the one thing that he still does is he still scores the goals. Now, he might not be playing right for the team. I tell you what, we've had Divock Origi and Daniel Sturridge up top who haven't fit in with the team. What's the difference? They don't score goals they don't score as many goals when they're not fitting in with the team. Sergio Aguero still manages to do it.
Sergio Aguero's so good. He's one of them, isn't he? It's, you know what he's like? It's like Suarez has got it. Best players in the world have the ability to just... got best goal scorers in the world have the ability to go and get themselves goals. Talk about service all you want, but you know, like, and it's, let's call it the difference between John Aldridge and Ian Rush. You know, Ian Rush could pick the ball up and just batter himself through and score. Aldridge was the poacher. You know what I mean? This is the difference. And Sergio Aguero is that guy. If he wants it, you'll go and get it, and he'll go stick it in the back of the net.
He just shoots and he hits the bottom corners and he hits the top corners, and there's not much more to it. You know, he's also got a bit of that Frank Lampard, Joe Cole-esque, it'll bounce off players in the area and go into the bottom corners still. And it's an underrated skill, is just being able to hit bottom corners all the time and make the keeper work. And even, you know, he's got other players there that if he has a shot and the keeper rebounds it, the other players know that Sergio's going to shoot, so I'm going to be first in there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's yeah, he's a danger. I love him so much.
And he's boss, mate.
The worst thing is the thing, because we talked about it probably the other week and whatever, and we've talked about it for a bit, that if he was on the out and they were looking to sell Liverpool, lashing. I would love Sergio Aguero at Liverpool so very, very much, but I don't know.
With Gerrard playing in the 10 and how he used to play with Torres.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
He'd fit right in there,
I wonder whether I would like Sergio Aguero from 3 years ago more than I would like him now. I mean,
I get what you're saying, but for me, it's a statement signing if we were to go out and do something like that, because there's other players there who want to play with Sergio Aguero because he frees up space and all that type of stuff for them.
It's just another one of those where, I mean, maybe it's that situation. Maybe that's almost the answer to the Firmino conundrum, because you don't need to, because like, the way we have of working against the top teams with Firmino up front, you could bring someone amazing in, and that could completely go out the window. I'm not saying what you have works eternally forever and ever, because of course it doesn't. But because the problem with Aguero ultimately is the problem with Daniel Sturridge, except it's less, obviously much less so, is you'd only ever get three quarters of a season out of him at very best. He's so very injury prone, and it's another Liverpool could really do with buying a couple of players who are just made a bit more of steel and less of cheese strings.
And look, you've reminded me of something. It's not on the forwards and stuff, but I saw a graphic last week. Apologies, I can't remember who it was, but it was about Sammy Hippier and the amount of games that he played for Liverpool. He averaged, over his 10 years at Liverpool, it was either 45 or 46 games a season.
Yeah.
Now, that's more than the Premier League play. Yeah. It wasn't the 21 team Premier League as well, and you've got Dejan Lovren, who's averaging about 25 a season now. Well, it's a massive difference.
No, exactly, and this is the thing about this is where Liverpool are weak, because what is the key to a good side?
I think consistency is got to be up there. Fitness has obviously got to be up there. And goals.
Cool. It was a very, very vague question. You've answered it tremendously. Given the thing, but in terms of you to build a side, let me say, if you're building a side, the key is the spine of that team. And the reason why it's the spine is because it holds everything together. But if you've got spinal problems, then it affects everything you do. You know, and to use the body analogy, you can break fingers and you can break arms and legs and you can do these things, but you can continue largely. You can still press on. You have a problem with the spine. That completely changes everything else you try to do off the back of that is entirely linked to that. And that's what Liverpool have got or lack is we just need. From goalkeeper, centre half, two centre mids, and a centre forward who are fit and capable of playing 40 plus games a season at the at a reasonable level of intensity that we're requiring of them, and when you lose that, because you again, what are you basing it all on? I think you can swap and change peripheral players to your heart's content, but you need those guys because they're the guys that carry your team at the minute. Like Jordan Henderson was that up until last year. Yeah. And now even he's becoming it because he had this ongoing foot problem and what have you. Or this heel problem, I should say, this plantar fasciitis or whatever the fuck it's called. Sort of actually with Firmino to some extent, to be fair. You know, I think he's been pretty consistent. This is pretty much one of the rare injuries that he's had in this last week. Lallana's been massively inconsistent, albeit better in the last year and a half. The goalkeeper's kind of been fine, but I guess there's a question marks over his level. And as you say, the centre-half's there. And this is where Liverpool could really do with, if we can find those couple of players, particularly from building from the back, because I wonder whether the intensity of what we do in an attacking sense could warrant chopping and changing regardless.
Yeah, look, on the flip side, I think Manchester City have more league titles under their belt if Vincent Kompany's fit.
Mm.
You know, I think, especially during the prime of his career and stuff like that, I think they've struggled to replace him at times during their seasons over the last few years and stuff. And look, yeah, we know that this is a problem, Paul. We know that we need centre-backs who can play every single week, because it's not just the fact that they're there, it's the fact that the understanding that they'll garner with each other. And that's that one thing, you know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, is we've played 50 centre-back partnerships under Jurgen Klopp in a year and a half.
No.
50. It's ridiculous.
It's ludicrous.
or 25. Maybe it's 25 with the two.
It's
yeah.
definitely not. I was like, 50, that is genuinely ludicrous.
Yeah, oh, we don't have that many centre-backs to play that.
I
told you, mate.
So,
anyone right, watching on video?
Literally, sound. Chris has just had a major drinking problem. If ever there was a reason to go to the redbentv.com to subscribe and watch the video version of this podcast, it was for that. Not the added bonus content we give you every week at the end. It is the question that you've, you know, you
had, I burnt my lip.
You did really
both
well.
Both top and bottom.
Great. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for this game in so much as I'm really nervous about it. Because we're in this perilous position now of the season where you claw yourself up out of a little hole or whatever, and what we could all do, having been in that hole, we could really all, I'm sure, and this is true of life, could do with more just happy times continuing to flow. I had a nightmare last weekend. It was like the, I think it must have been the Saturday before the Burnley game, that we played Man United, and it was that feeling of we got ourselves back up and we got ourselves back into contention, and we lost 7-1 to Man United, and it was more that I can't believe this has happened. I never felt that this was. I thought we were back on track and blah blah blah. But these are the fears that we have, that we just want us to be competitive. We want to make this top four thing, and look, dropping points to Man City does not end that in any way, shape or form. But the beauty of it is, you okay now? Brilliant. The beauty of it is that those nerves mean we're playing for something. Yeah. And
that's what you want.
That's what footy's all about.
You want that at the end of the season, don't you? Yeah. This is the thing. We were on Ball Street this week and we started to look at the fixtures. And it's the first time this season I've looked at the fixtures that everybody else has got, the rest of the top seven, and Liverpool. And you're looking and you go, Manchester City and Everton. If we can get through these two games mm-hmm. with the fixtures that the other teams have got left, we're on for top four,
yeah.
Because I think we've got, I think out of all of those fixtures, we've got less of the teams that are involved at the top end of the table, and we've got less of the teams that are involved at the bottom. Now, for me, you want to be playing those teams with nothing to fucking play for.
The ones who are, once they get back from the international break, largely they're on the
beach. That's who you want to be playing, yeah. And we've got more of those teams. And yes, okay, people will say we've struggled against teams further down the league. I get that. Mm. But the confidence that if we were to win against Manchester City and Everton would give, and looking at everybody else's fixtures, Arsenal have got horrendous next three fixtures, haven't they? I think yeah. it is. And you look at it and you go, yeah. We've got a point gap on Arsenal already. I'd rather have that 5 points in the bag. We've mm-hmm. got the two games and the way that they're playing and the fixtures that they've got, Man United, Man City playing each other and stuff like that, European football back. It's a good time of the season to be a Liverpool fan. And as you quite rightly say, this is the type of feelings that you want at this stage of the season.
Yeah.
You don't want to be going into this stage of the season going, maybe next year.
Yeah, exactly,
and we've had
exactly.
fucking too much of that,
Paul. We, to be fair, like those came out in January, didn't they? And I think they were a bit... They were right in so much as, because obviously, you know, we left ourselves with nothing to play for in terms of silverware. And that is what it is. And that in that regard, people say season over. But listen, if you're Man United, or if you're Man City, or if you're Chelsea, given where they've been in the last 10 years, I think it's season over in that regard. But I think top four is just such a... It's not a trophy, and it shouldn't be lauded as such. But in terms of just getting Liverpool back to not just an equilibrium, but a much higher equilibrium, then, you know, there'll be no open top bus parade for a top four finish for Liverpool, and nor should there be. But we'll be buzzing for it, like, you know what I mean? I'll be dead happy, and it'll give us that excitement for the future. Because
is it 2-7 we've made top four, or 2-8, something like that? It's not good enough.
But it's the promise of the promise of the manager, the promise of some of the players that we've bought, and you know, we need that step up in order to prove it. Because it's the narrative is too easily swung towards, oh, look at go back to the finals that we lost, and go back to those key games that we dropped points in, go back to those games that the fuck ups. Whereas when you actually take a positive step forward season by season, you get to write off all the things that didn't go right as part of the learning curve. So let's hope we get back to that.
For me, right, we have been shopping in the Europa League bracket for far too long, mm-hmm. and you don't get Champions League with Europa League players. Or you can, but it's difficult, and it's difficult to do it consistently.
Mm-hmm. I think you can, you just don't. it's harder, clearly, and you don't stay a Champions League club with Europa League
exactly.
players.
Yeah. You need to be shopping in that pool of Champions League players, the ones with the experience, the ones with the skills to get themselves there and to stay there, and that's what Liverpool need to do. And we need to. This is the thing: if Liverpool get into the top four this season and we still shop in the same bracket, I will be fucking raging, Paul.
Yeah,
because I want to see some serious progression.
How do you know what the difference is, though?
Well, for a start, they're just better players.
But how would you quantify that?
I would say that we need experience in this squad. Uh-huh. You know, and I've said this, you know, we've had this debate a couple of times and stuff, is that stop buying the 23-year-olds who might get there. We've got to start buying players who are there already at 23, not the 23-year-olds who could make it into the Champions League and all that type of stuff. They should be, if we're going to continue with the way that FSG are buying players at 23 years old, they should be playing the team in the Premier in the Champions League
already.
Yeah,
okay.
They can still have promise. You can still be young and you still be good enough to play in the Champions League.
But is this not our problem exacerbated just as much by us being the club that buys from the, we're just instead of buying from Southampton, we're buying from Leverkusen instead.
No, because I don't think we should be buying from Leverkusen. I think we should be buying from Sevilla. You know, teams that have got experience of winning things, who are a Champions League side. All right, they've won they're out of the Champions League now, but they've been in the Champions League a few seasons on the bounce. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys have experience of winning trophies. There's teams out there that win cups. There's teams out there that win things. It's not Leverkusen. They don't fucking win anything.
Yeah.
They're in the Champions League because that league's weak.
Okay. But again, I it's devil's advocate. We did that. We bought Moreno and we bought Lazar Markovic.
Yeah, we can buy better players than them.
But what I mean is they would fit that mould that you're talking about.
Yeah, they would, but I'm also talking about 27-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, I've sat here with you many times over the last few weeks and talked about buying a striker who's 27, who's fucking good at his job.
Yeah.
You've got to do that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But yeah, what my point I'm driving at is that I think that this, we need to buy better players is a bit of
also
a fucking...
Also, the Markovic thing's not really true, is it? Like, you know, he won the league with Belgrade. Let's be honest here, we're not talking of them as a Champions League.
No, but what I mean is he won the league with Benfica. He then played in the Europa League and got suspended for the final, didn't
Come
he?
Come on, mate.
No, but the point is, what I'm saying is, you're saying by players you've got experience at that level. If you're saying Sevilla, then Benfica are just as... Sevilla and Benfica are a similar level of...
I don't think so. I don't think they get anywhere near as far in those European competitions.
To be honest, I couldn't say I follow Benfica in the European progression, but they are historically that a similar. They are a Champions League.
Yeah, but historically, Liverpool are a Champions League club, but we've got no Champions League players.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's fine. But yeah, as I say, I think it's one of them. I'm not asked about this. It's not about, for me, it's not about the profile of who we sign, but it's more about, because I think I disagree in so much as I think because if there's the right profile, 25, 26, 27-year-old, then sound. Yeah, absolutely. If we can get them, then go for it. It's not about that. I think it's about us, because I think at the minute there are every year there's a premium there's a limited number of those 22-year-olds to go in 23 who are absolutely top quality, and they're not signing for us. They are signing for just other Champions League clubs, basically, and they're evolving that way. And so we're then signing the second tier of those players, which means that the odds of them being a success are therefore lower. For me, it always goes back to I will always go back to the Torres and Suarez arguments on that neither of them would fit the mould of what we're talking about here, and yet they're the two best buys Liverpool have made in recent years. And if we went and bought the next one of them, we'd be all.
But the problem is, we're not in a position to do that because we're not playing Champions League.
Well, exactly.
You're right.
Yeah,
I'm agreeing with you, mate.
So yeah, I think that this notion of going out and buying the pre-made is a dangerous.
I disagree with that.
Why?
Oh, because I think you can go and get pre-made talent. Just because Liverpool don't doesn't mean you can't do it.
No, what I mean is, I think it's what I'm saying is, it's dangerous in so much as you. if you buy in at 27, they automatically have to do exactly what you need them to do because you're not buying a 27-year-old who doesn't turn around the pitch and press and do that and then turn them into a player who turns around the pitch and presses. That's actually more it's more difficult to mould. If you buy a 27, they need to be a fucking absolute perfect fit for you, whereas you buy a couple of years younger and you've got that time to make them
look more what you need. I'm not saying it's easy, Paul. I'm just saying that you can, because look at Ibrahimovic this season, mate.
Yeah.
He's doing it. You know, he's much older than that. There are players out there that you can go and get that can do these jobs. You've just got to find them.
Yeah.
And, I'm not saying for one second they have to be playing Champions League football.
You just said that?
For me, I would like to see more of that.
Yeah.
I would like to see more of that. There's nothing wrong with that. No, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I say, it's one of those, isn't it? Ultimately, with transfers, I think it's more about... What we'll need to do, it's less about profile. It's less the age. I don't think that the profile of the age is important. I agree that we could do with one or two players who've been there and done it, because that's what Man United have done. That's what they've done with Zlatan. Because you could go and get someone to score 20 goals a season, but what he's done is they are putting a sticky plaster over the growing wound that is lack of league winning experience that's growing in that squad, and he's kind of there to kind of drag up the other lads in the absence of all the players that they had that they binned off, the older generation, you know, your Giggs and your Vidic's and your Ferdinand's, etc. What it's important for us to do is get the right players for what we do, because again, I come back to Sadio Mane again, you know, if we wouldn't, based on that mould, we wouldn't sign Sadio Mane if we were buying player, because we'd have gone all in on Goethe.
I think you've kind of taken what I've tried to say wrong, or I've not explained it well enough. I'm not saying eight players coming in need to all have that, but I think one or two do.
Yeah,
and that's the difference. You know, we're talking about a spine for a side earlier on. You buy in that.
Yeah.
You can fill the rest out with what you want.
Yeah.
You can fill the rest out with profiling, but we need a focal point to this team.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking for Liverpool to do this summer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's cool. But yeah, it'd be very interesting to see. The only point I'm making is, like, as with anything, I think it's such a nuanced situation that anyone who goes, we need to buy and defines it wholly as experience or ready made, yada yada yada. There's as many examples of ready made players absolutely going tits up as there are of course,
there's, but there's just as many examples of players who are 23 coming into clubs who fail.
Well, exactly.
This is the transfer market we're talking about.
Exactly, that's the point I'm making.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So we will move on. There was a tweet that came into me this week from How Cho Like Da. And he basically says, do you think Liverpool need to do a massive clear out and spend big to bring in quality? I would sell ... And he sent me a graphic. I'm going to see if I can get through this in one breath. Manninga, Bogdan, Mignolet, Lovren, Clavin, Randall, Sacco, Flano, Wisdom, Moreno, Lucas, Milner, Grujic, Chan, Stewart, Sturridge, Ings, Markovic. That would have been easier if I wasn't struggling to breathe with this cough so much. And we were talking to this on the train yesterday and saying, I think so many of these are absolute givens. because by and large, it's the ones that are out on loan or the ones that are getting to that age range now where you're thinking, whatever, we'll just go and buy somebody who does your job better. And of those, therefore, I think the nailed on obvious ones, Chris, are Bogdan, Randall, Wisdom, I think Lucas, Stewart, Sturridge, and Markovic. You could maybe make a case additionally for, I think, Flanagan. And Sacco seems almost certainly, but just because I wouldn't put it past him to have an amazing rest of the season, Crystal Palace, and Klopp has still left that door open by all accounts. Is there anyone there that you think it's a ridiculous shout to sell first and foremost?
No, not a completely ridiculous shout. The only one that comes close, well, there's three, four maybe that come close, but I can understand reasons. It's Ings, Chan, Grujic and Milner for me. And mm-hmm. the four names there that I'm not looking to sell.
Lovren?
No.
Not bothered?
It's not that I'm not bothered, it's that he's a really good backup centre-back.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Sell him.
No, keep him.
Right, okay.
Make him third or fourth choice.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do with it. Why are we afraid to have a squad?
Yeah. Well, this is this is the point on this, is that Liverpool,
you sell them. We've got Matip, by the way.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and Gomez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who hasn't fucking joined the Premier League, has he?
In there as well, yeah. So, yeah, let me quickly, because I think the Manning shout, I don't think it matters.
I'll tell you what, while you work that out, I'll go through the ones that I would sell.
Uh-huh.
I would sell Adam Bogdan, Alberto Moreno, Randall, Sacco, Wisdom, Lucas, Stewart, Markovic and Sturridge. They're my absolutes that I'm selling. I've got...
How many is that?
That is 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, believe it or not.
10?
And I'm worried at that point. And unsures, I've got Manninger, Mignolet, Flanagan, Chan, based on contract, Brannigan, Kiravea and Allen. So I think I've included more players than him.
Allen?
Yeah, Allen Rodriguez. Because okay. We're not sure about his work permit yet, are we? So that's why he's unsure.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm thorough.
Sure.
I've pulled the entire squad up and I've left no stone unturned.
Okay, go ahead.
So look, Manninger, the reason I'm unsure, because I don't know what the plan is with him.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm keeping Karius definitely, I'm keeping Ward definitely, until we've had a look at him or until whatever. I'm unsure about Mignolet because I think he's having a good season,
yeah,
to be honest with you. But then there's an inkling in me that says, look, he's not good enough for Liverpool Football Club, I don't believe. Are we best selling him now while his value is probably going to be as his highest?
Yeah.
Or if he sits on a bench for a year, then his value plummets. Yeah. And I think if that's the case, if Karius is going to be the number one next season, you probably look to ship Mignolet out while his value is high.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Manninger one for me, it's not even worth the effort to type his name into this for me, because who cares? Who cares where the Manninger stays? You're not getting any money for him.
You're not selling him, are you?
Exactly. Yeah. He's probably on a coach's wage. Yeah. As much as anything else, like, so, and from the, actually, funnily enough, the praise that's come out of him for him recently, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, like, we were talking about Jean-Michel Ferry being the spy in the camp. It wouldn't shock me if they really like Achterberg and they love his work ethic and all this, but they've got Manninger in just to be around and have a look and tell it's a feedback on what he's like as a goalkeeper coach. Maybe you never know. But either way, like I say, Manninger, who gives a shit whether he stays or goes? Let's be perfectly honest, because he doesn't contribute to the actual playing time anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Bogdan, yeah, is an absolute shoo-in, because Klopp hates him and everyone else hates him as well. It's just whether he's fit enough to be sold. I think he'd done his cruciate last or something like that.
He came back, didn't he?
Yeah. I agree with you on the Mignolet thing. I would only sell Mignolet if we were going to go out and buy an amazing goalkeeper. You know, if we were going to go out and buy, like, because I think we've done really well in the transfer market last summer. I think, you know, by and large, Paul Tompkins always talks about it. You got it, at best, you get a 50% success rate in any transfer window, and I think because of the goalkeeping situation, that's one of the ones that's not quite worked out, but. Because Karius hasn't proved himself one way or the other, as you say, Mignolet's proved himself capable. I don't think he's good enough to. He doesn't strike me as a Premier League title winning goalkeeper. But then players do surprise you. That's as much on 10 other players as anything else. Because they're both all right. I don't think it's such a heavy priority that it's something to be asked about. But yeah, I agree with that. If you were gonna sell him, this summer would make as much sense as any. Like that, and but what a lot of this boils down to, Chris, is what you're saying there. This squad needs to expand,
yeah,
not contract. But I do get it by the same notion as that, because, like I say, I've already put. I don't think it's worth.
Well, here's the thing. I've sold 10, but 3 are first team squad.
Well, here's the thing. So of that, like I say, Randall, although he's played like our game, I'm not counting Randall. I'm not counting Wisdom. I think we can count Stewart just about, because he's been at fringes at best. One. So you really look. I'm looking at Moreno, Stewart, Sturridge,
and Mark, and Lucas.
And Lucas.
There's your four.
To be fair,
I didn't really count Stewart to begin with, but yeah, that's probably wrong. He should probably be counted.
And the only one of them who might, again, I think Sturridge will go, because I think Sturridge has to go. He's an asset. He's £15 million of player that we're not getting any use of, and we could put towards someone who actually does exactly what we need to do. Stewart, fringe at best. I think he's had a little look, and if he was better, we'd have seen more of him. Lucas will go, and I think he'll go with everyone's blessings and go and have a full season somewhere, a few good seasons, hopefully somewhere else. The Moreno one is the only one of the first teamers there, because I disagree with Milner, Grujic, Chan, I disagree with Ings, I disagree with Clavan, I disagree with Lovren. Maybe Clavan actually is it. We'll put a little hash by him and say, if we were to buy another bot, we went out and bought a boss centre back. I don't think we need Clavan if we want to give Gomez time, but.
But this is the thing, though. We've talked about it already, Paul. I think we're probably better going into the season with 5 centre-backs. You look at Lovren's injury record, you look at Matip's injury record, and then we've got one more, Joe Gomez. We still don't really know what's going to happen with him. Yeah. You know, 2 big injuries now, isn't it? Is it one? Didn't he get injured when he came back?
He did, but like, it wasn't like, I think it was, it wasn't like his...
Yeah, so I'd still keep Clavin around, because again, he's probably not on a lot of wages, just for that little bit of security and cover.
Yeah, I think that, again, it will depend on if we buy anyone else and what the decision is made over Sacco in the summer. You would suspect Sacco will just go, because there will be no shortage of takers for him, if he has a good
15 to 20 million quid.
Exactly, if he plays well for Crystal Palace. But the Moreno one's the only thing for me there, and a lot of this depends on how many players we're comfortable bringing in, because... I know this is theoretically the last transition summer, almost, as it were, because this is where you go from your build up and then you create a squad that it just in the base level of, in terms of numbers should be able to be competitive and on the European front as well. So we do need more more players, and there's a balance to that. So I would like to get back to a world where Liverpool only need to buy 2 or 3 really good players this summer, rather than having to buy 7 every single year and worry about how we embed them into things. So I come back to the Moreno thing, is you probably should go for similar reasons to Daniel Sturridge, to be perfectly honest. He's an asset that we can get money off, but it wouldn't shock me to see him stick around, because if you look at the players who are just, he's just a nothing, is he? You know what I mean? He's there, he's okay. I don't know. My fear is we just get rid of too many, and then we're faced with another, here we are starting from scratch again kind of summer, and trying to teach as many players, new players, what we're doing, as we've already got players who know it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Like,
is there anyone else that you think there that you would, that we've not, because you mentioned, you obviously bring in the Alan Souza, Rodrigo de Souza, who was it?
Yeah, Brannigan was one that I was unsure of, because I don't really know what's going on with his career, if I'm pretty honest with you.
I'm pretty sure he'll go as well.
Kiraveya
will go as well.
Exactly. And Flanagan, for me, was my other unsure, other than Mignolet and Manigan.
Flanagan is the one, I wonder, I don't, because I've got no concept of where he's at anymore. He's one for me, and I've said this, is that if he's back to a level where he's capable of playing football again on a regular basis, and we are, and he, I think he could be a good transition good transition player in that regard, is that maybe because of, let's use the Moreno example or whatever, if we needed to get rid of someone else, what harm is there in keeping John Flanagan around to be that guy who maybe plays a handful of games? You know, he plays all the cup competitions, or he, but and I don't know where quite. I don't know in this system that we play. I don't know where he would necessarily fit into that.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you know, the Echo did this thing on Trent Alexander-Arnold taking over from Nathaniel Clyne and Woodgin. I think, you know, quite honestly, I think it's shit journalism. I think there's no story there. Nathaniel Clyne's the starter at right back for Liverpool, but the way that normally you'd go, well, you know, he can do a job at left back and all that. I think Kleine can do a better job at left back than Milner.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's playing exactly the same way. You know, he'll be cutting inside probably on his right foot in much the same way that Milner does. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going bursting down the wing in it and left footed crosses in, which, you know, Milner does a little bit of. Maybe he'd do a little bit more. Off, yeah. But yeah, you know, so you could end up in a scenario where we got Trent on one, Kleine on the other, if we don't sign a left back, and mm-hmm. you know, Flanagan can fit in behind them, Milner can slot in behind them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. With the Flanagan thing, it's just his passion for it that I love, and he clearly wants to do it. And as I say, if he's going to go and play a handful of games in the Premier League, regardless, he might as well be on the books because he's never going to be a bad influence.
He's going to be better for us than he will be for a Burnley, exactly. because of that passion.
Yeah, exactly that. And like I said, I don't know that he necessarily would fit in. The only other thing I could see him doing is, I'd almost, maybe not, I wouldn't want him anchoring the midfield on his own or anything like that. But I think if you had those big games, you wanted that influence of someone who just enjoys going in and putting the boot in and doing whatever, I think he could do an enforcer job alongside someone who carried a bit more water. But I'm not sure
I could get behind that, to be honest.
But it's just a shame. If he was just a little bit faster, I think there'd just be no issues over Flanagan.
I think the thing for me because we're talking about Flanagan, I'll say Flanagan, but I think a lot of the things that we've got and a lot of the problems that we have as a possession-based team is you need those midfielders to really be able to pass the ball really well. And you also need it in the centre-backs, because one minute you can be attacking, but you've also got to be ready to actually be involved in the possession, because it will come back to you.
Yeah.
So you've got to be far enough away from let's say your Ragnar Klavan or your Joel Matip, you've got to be far enough away from the centre-forward to be able to offer a pass, but also close enough to them in case you lose the ball.
Yeah,
and I think that's where we really struggle this season. And I don't think that he's good positionally, but I don't think his passing is good enough to play that DM role. Equally, I don't think our centre backs, Clavin's really good on the ball, but he's not fast enough to catch up with centre forwards if we do lose the ball and we break. And I think that's part of the reason that we're so bad in transition is because they're playing in such a way where they really have to back the midfielders up.
Yeah,
yet they also have to keep an eye on the centre forwards. I think that's why we struggle in transition.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent. Thanks. It's a shame that the Flanagan stuff. I would love to be able to go, yeah, God, absolutely, John Flanagan, back in. And the only thing I would say about Flano is that he's proven so many people wrong time and time again when he's been given the chance to do it. I think we based on initially when he was like 16, 17, and okay, impressive for a kid. Going into that 13-14 season, nobody had him anywhere near our team.
Nope.
Nobody had him anywhere near there. And then he absolutely owned that left back slot that season. And maybe it's just one of those things. Those people's times pass.
It's a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But he's one of them that he defo possesses something. And sometimes that will to succeed can make it can get more out of you than anyone can possibly know. Fingers crossed, like I say. I mean, it would be sad to see it go, because I do think we need more. We do need some local lads in the side, but that's probably more on Trent to step up and be that as much as anything else. Very interesting one. Let us know yours, actually, if you've the players that you would absolutely, unequivocally get rid of in the summer, and then go through your rest of them as well, and see how many you come to, because that is, I think there's very much a tipping point where Liverpool can't actually afford to rid themselves of too many players, because if we're thin on the ground now, imagine when we've got, you know, potentially another 10 games or something to play next season as well. So yeah, thoughts on that in the comments, or tweet us at the Redmen TV. So, get in the bin this week. I don't want to do too much on this because I know we want to do the speak out stuff, but I got an email from Richard Harrison, which I just want to quickly read through. And he says, I am writing to you guys following an incident at the match yesterday which left a really bad taste in my mouth, so much that I found it hard to enjoy the second half. He said, I take a seat, my seat in the main stand, and there's a guy next to me. He's like, do you know all the songs, mate? And I'm like, yeah, I do. We get a few chants going together. He was a bit odd, but he wants to support the team, and I'm always frustrated in the main stand at the Prawn Sandwich Brigade, so I was fully with him. Anyway, so about 39 minutes, we're one down. It's deathly quiet, and despite our efforts, only a very small handful of fans get in on the chants. Now, I'm not condoning what he did next. He was being a bit of a bell, to put it bluntly, but he turns to the crowd and he goes on this expletive rant about people not singing. I felt the frustration myself, but I've never turned to the crowd and give a few thousand people a bollocking. So I got where he was coming from, even if he conveyed it spectacularly poorly. Next thing, everyone starts giving him shit, telling him to sit down. A few shouts of, I've sat here for years, fuck off, came his way. Loads of people taking the piss out of him, saying they're going to take his walking stick and all that. Basically, a few rough lads defaulted to being dickheads to him because he was a bit weird. What saddened me most was, he goes down on 44 minutes into the concourse and he never came back. One of our own fans, who was trying to sing, get the crowd going, and eventually blows up, obviously felt too embarrassed or too scared, I don't know, to come back to a seat in the second half. So for the whole second half, I'm practically sat there silent and nobody singing any songs, and I couldn't forget the fella never returned. Is that what it's come to now with our own fans, that someone showing passion, someone trying to make noise and support the team, get absolutely slated and feels that he can't come back to his seat? Yeah, fantastic question from Rich Harrison there.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and I'll be perfectly honest, I go kind of two ways. I go two ways on this because I think the fundamental of it, I think Rich is saying there himself, I totally agree with this, that people who want to sing should be lauded. You know, anyone who goes there and is prepared to make noise, they're the people who contribute to Anfield, and there's no... Whilst there are loads of people who don't like singing, they don't go to sing, and I think there is a place for that in football grounds, particularly that's what the side stands are for to some extent. There is a direct correlation between the best atmospheres in Anfield and the best results. So yeah, for me, I always feel we need to be as inclusive as possible with people who want to make that noise, Chris.
Yeah, I think that's fully right. You know, I feel terrible for the lad, and I feel terrible for Rich as well, to be honest with you. I mean, he's gone there, he clearly wants to get involved in the atmosphere. The problem is, you cannot, in this day and age, turn around to anyone, but mostly Scousers, and fucking shout at them and swear at them, because they will shout back.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're all like.
Yeah.
Because we don't take no shit off anybody. So if he was expecting to stand up and shout at people and them just to turn on sides, doesn't understand Scousers, because Scousers hate being told what to do and they hate being fucking sworn at.
People in general, don't they? I think that's the issue with it. And is because I was thinking about this, because I think we've been getting wound up by this, the atmosphere thing and the singing thing quite a lot, because I thought there was a real natural build happening this season. I noticed like there's more people popping about the seats and screaming shit at the pitch and all this kind of stuff. I just felt like something that was building. I really felt like that dropped off a cliff because of the performances in January and what have you. And I've thought about it. I said to you the other week, there was a couple of dad and lad must have been in his mid-20s or whatever, and obviously his older dad, and it was a big game not too long ago, and he was sat in the seats next to me, which there's been a rotation of people there this season, and they just stood there with arms crossed for the whole game and didn't sing once. And I very nearly turned around and went, do you know the words? And you know, ultimately, what are you getting out of that? You know, that's just me being confrontational, me being a prick. Now, I agree that it's like if people are clearly tourists and they're wanting to sing but they're not sure, there's a balance between saying, do you want to help you sing along, or do you want me to give you a hand? Because I think there's something to that. But I think there's an approach to it, and I think that creating a schism in our fan base where we turn around and bollock people for not singing. I agree, people have got to want to do something, Chris. It's like my wife always says, I don't want to tell you to do it, I want you to want to do it. Just talking about washing the dishes, by the way. But I think that's the biggest issue we've got, is finding a way to encourage the people who are maybe too scared or sitting on the fence. I think there are just some steadfast people who won't sing because they've never sung, the dad's never sung and the granddad's never sung, and that's what going the match is for them.
Yeah, you're not going to change those people. The club can do things to change where people are sat. and they can put people together if they really want to. Yeah. You know, Watford have done it, haven't they, with that side of their... It's not a cop, is it?
Yeah, the far end.
The far end. You know, Watford have got a singing section that runs all the way down their ground there, and I thought it was really good. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there who don't like the sort of false atmospheres and all that type of stuff, like the drums give. I think when it's done right, it really does help. And I think, you know, just people banging on the back of the cop makes a big difference. Yeah. Why I nearly broke my hand doing it the other week.
Yeah.
I love doing it. I buzz off when I see that my seat's right at the back or right at the side. I'm like, yes, this is why I move seats. I enjoy this type of thing. This is what you get. And you can pick people out, and you know, you can, you, if you start singing before the game, you could, while everyone's sat down or getting to the seats, and someone else's, you can almost pick them out and you can give them a little nod or a little wink, or you can just mentally note that they're going to be the ones singing with you. And the problem is, when you do start these chants, you've just got to keep going until people do.
Exactly.
And that's the really difficult thing, because it's too easy to fall out after a line.
It's a leading by example thing completely on that, because I'm not a chant starter. I'm not. But if someone, if it's that encouragement, and I love that feeling of, because the guy who sits on the other side of me, he loves it, he'll have a sing, and we've got a complete, like a tacit agreement between the two of us.
Back each other up.
Yeah, exactly, you know, it's unspoken, but if he sings, I'll sing with him, and vice versa. And then when you get the guys behind you going as well, that's when you know you've got some real power to what you're doing. And it is just about, it's about an example, and that's a shame, because here's the thing. And that's on that fella. If he just carried on, and him and Richard just carried on singing like they were, that's infectious.
Yeah.
And that catches on. It takes bottle, because you do feel there was one in the death game, it was, might have been the Burnley game, and like someone sang it fair in front of me. And I went, I'll have a go at this, and I had a go, and then it died on its ass after two verses, and you just naturally feel like a tip, because I can't get over the being 14 and going on your own, that literally my Evertonian mates' voices ring in my head whenever you start a chant that doesn't take off. But there is that. I think in terms of the singing stuff, I think there is a, I don't think telling bollocking people and shouting at people to do it is not the way to do it, because I think some people, look, there are different types of personalities in this world. There is not one size fits all. And you always have this that's why the greatest coaches in football have the ability to bollock and also put an arm around players where they need to be done it. And that's the one that most consistently is more likely to drive people on, though, is just being part of a crowd is much easier. You know what I mean? So that regard, so the more people do it, the more likely you are to do it, because the less uncomfortable or weird you feel about it. And that's why the people who've got the biggest bollocks and the bravery to do it just need to continue to do it regardless. Don't be put off by the people around you.
And just try and remember, and this is something that's only come to me fairly recently, to be honest with you, no one turns around and looks at you. No one knows your face.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Honestly.
When did you ever turn around to look at the person behind you?
You don't. It's too awkward. It's not a thing.
Look at their crotch.
You know, it's not a thing. So you just got to keep on going. You just got to keep on going. And
yeah.
Look, this reminds me of the Liverpool Echo stuff that we were talking about last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Liverpool Echo put a very Tom tweet out that said, "What do you think of this, Reds?" about a guy who had a snide little photo taken. He wrote down the words, "He'll never walk alone." And they were...
Sorry, there was a fella who wrote the words, "He'll never walk alone," on a piece of paper.
Yeah, and then took it into whatever stand he was in. I'm not sure what it was. It might have been main stand or whatever. And the guy behind him, little snide, has taken a photo. Ah, look at this tit, basically, or whatever. I'm paraphrasing and I'm making stuff up there. He's taken a photo of him. The Echo have picked it up and said, "What do you think of this?" Shifting it towards, "Can you believe that it's come to this type of a thing?" And Liverpool fans were straight on it. It's sound. If he wants to come and sing in the ground, brilliant. I'd rather he writes the words down, because then he'll get them right. And that way he can sing, and that way he can add to the atmosphere. And loads of Liverpool fans, I'm really happy that they did this, all sprung to his defence, and some of the bigger sites and that all got involved. And the Echo have taken that down, that entire article, because I tried to show you it last night, a couple of days after the fact, and it's gone. And this is the thing. Liverpool has to be inclusive. And I'm talking about people who come to watch the game all over. if you see someone who doesn't know what he's doing, put an arm around them, tell them what they should be doing. Even just go to them, you're unsure, because there's a pub over there, I tell you, if people email and go, what pub do you go to the park, because that's the best atmosphere for singing that you can go to. If you want something else, go to the 12th Man, go to these. Don't go to the Sandon, it's the biggest pub, but it's not the best for atmosphere. Yeah. There's loads of places, and we should be helping these fans get involved, because they have travelled and spent so much money that they're probably not there just to sit and watch with their arms folded.
Yeah.
They've spent so much money, they want to be engulfed, and they have this atmosphere flow over them and feel like they're part of something bigger, because they clearly do already. Mm-hmm. They've travelled a long way, they've spent a lot of money, and I think it's about us as Scousers, as Liverpool fans who go to the match regularly, to be inclusive of everybody and to try and cultivate an atmosphere, because ultimately all we all want is for our team to win, and the best way for that is when all the fans stick together, all put their arm out to each other and all fucking chant for the team on
the pitch. Exactly, that's it. You know, what it boils down to is you can't change people. There's people who don't if you don't want to sing, you don't want to sing. I would always say consider where you are. And that's what my pet peeve is. If you just because you've had your season ticket somewhere forever, just because it's been in your family forever, I think particularly with the cop, I think things need to change. I think there needs to be an agreement of people who say, if you're going to sit in the cop, you really should be prepared to be a bit more involved in what happens. But by and large, it's that thing. I think we need to make it. It's those people, as I say, it's those people who look like me. Like I say, people like me who, I've got no problem with singing, but I struggle to work up the courage to be the guy who starts the song, you know. But there's two fellas around me and they've got, it must be a few years back, I was seeing these old Scouse voices and they just start the song.
But they start it differently, don't they? On the field, and they do this massive thing so everybody can get involved in it, and you go, as soon as you hear that, it's like, beacon, what's going on? I'm going to fucking nail this.
Yeah.
And this is what you've got to do. You've got to listen out for where the songs are starting. I can't start a chant. I'm not a chant starter either, but if I hear that one thing that means there's a chant going, I'm fucking pumped.
I'll join in on any chant. You know what I mean? I'm mad for chants. It was weird because I can start. It's because I don't drink so much anymore. But I used to. It was a singing town. I could start do a good the Top Gun. You know, you've lost that love and feel, and that was a bit of a party piece. But you know, again, in the ground, you realize I will sing along with anything. It's just about making sure those people who want to sing are empowered to sing, because the people who can start chants feel comfortable in doing that. And so the thing for me that needs to get in the bin this week is making fans feel uncomfortable singing at football matches.
Yeah, the chairs do enough of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get through to some of your questions. One that follows on, I think, quite nicely. And I apologise because I don't know what alphabet these letters come from, so I'm not going to be able to do. But it looks like McCann, I'll go with. What are your views on LFC fans outside the UK? Do you consider them, brackets us, as equals? After all, we do share the passion, frustration, and love the same as you guys. Cheers. Now, I do feel like this is a loaded question. I'll answer this one because I think in the very simplest of levels, look, anyone who shares my passion for Liverpool Football Club, I don't give a toss where you're from. Genuinely, not asked. It's the people I can't stand, Liverpool fans I can't stand, are the ones who aren't passionate about it. The ones who follow. I don't know what their reasons are for following the club. Maybe it's a sense of just duty, and it's beating them down, and they don't get the same thrill from it anymore. You can get that from Liverpool as much as you can get it from anywhere in the world. That's the things that bother me more than anything else.
Yeah, I think for me, it's not a different view, but it's a different way of looking at it for me, because I follow American sports, and I would hate to think that people think that I'm not passionate about American sports because I'm from the UK. Like, I've been watching the Minnesota Vikings now for 18 years. I'm 34 years old. I've been watching American footy since I was about 5 with my dad.
Yeah.
So nearly the best part of 30 years, which is a lot longer than 20-year-old Americans, because I've just been alive longer.
Yeah.
So I've followed that sport for longer. I might not know all those idiosyncrasies about the sport because I've never played the sport, but I analyse and I look into stuff and I listen to podcasts and I read articles and I read coaches' manuals and all this type of stuff about the sport that I actually really enjoy. And I think nobody could aim, like, you can't say, oh, you're not passionate because you're from the... No, you can be. Of course you can be.
Absolutely.
I've got an affinity with that club for whatever reason that is. And if you've got an affinity with Liverpool, and it doesn't matter where you're from, then look, I back that.
It's that's the thing, isn't it? And I have it whenever we Liverpool go on tour in the summer and our games run at 2 o'clock in the morning. If Liverpool's games run at 2 o'clock in the morning UK time, I probably wouldn't support Liverpool in the same way. I'm not getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch it, because that's just not the culture around it. So when you consider the not just the odd people, hundreds, thousands upon thousands of Liverpool fans in all different continents, every continent on earth, get up. You know, the Americans are getting up, and the Australians are getting up, and they're basically fucking their day, they're fucking their week up to, you know, and they're killing the sleep patterns for 9 months out of the year.
That's a lot.
To watch it. But look, I've had my sleep pattern fucked up for 5 years as a parent. I couldn't even do that for my entire time of supporting Liverpool. It'd be ridiculous. So, no, that's that level of passion I've got no problem with. Where I do have an issue, and this is the problem, on where I my only fears stem from, it's the people who don't choose to embrace the Scouse culture that is the heart of Liverpool Football Club. And that's my worry for Liverpool in general, is that will fade out. You know, whether that's because there's local kids who are not who have lesser access to football matches, or just the way football's gone, it's outpriced, or it's easy to watch it on the telly and blah, blah, blah. That, you know, no longer, it's just too hard for dads to take lads to games. It's the way I was raised, you know, sitting with my dad and going to matches and going to cup finals and all this kind of stuff. The point is that, and it came back to, it was actually one of the Long Ball Street podcasts not too long ago, and it was Matt who's on that, and he's a Raiders fan in the NFL, and he said along the lines of, he'd love to see the Raiders over in
UK. Matt, that's wrong.
Well, this is the point, and my fear over it, and it's been in microcosm, we've seen with the managerial situations and stuff, and we see it now. You know, the problem is that because there are so many Liverpool fans, It would be theoretically possible. So you could put it down to a public vote. There will be more Liverpool. There are more Liverpool fans outside of Liverpool, yeah, than there are in Liverpool, because it's just a numbers game. There are only so many people within the city of Liverpool who can possibly support them. Now, mercifully, the core of those people outside are just share the same level of passion. It wouldn't be an issue. But my fear, and whether it's founded or unfounded, it's a fear. You don't have to, fears don't have to be founded, is that if you put it to a vote, Liverpool to up sticks and move, like American sports teams do all the time, move the franchise to a different city or a different fucking country, that vote, my club could be taken away from me by the sheer number of votes that it would exist outside of the city of Liverpool. And although that will never, ever happen. Never, ever, ever. But that's the point.
Can I allay your fear slightly?
Yeah.
I don't think there is a city in this world that has a higher number of Liverpool fans. So if it was going down to a vote for a city,
yeah,
I don't think anyone else would win.
But the point is that, but again, it's one of those things that it's easier to go West Coast to East Coast than it is to go any East Coast or West Coast to England, isn't it? You know what I mean? So it's like when you put a Liverpool game on anywhere in America, people from America flock to that game. And that's the thing for me, is that, and it goes back to, like, There's too many people who support Liverpool for whatever reason you choose to support it, but there's a little thing of, like, the people don't like the Scouts, sometimes don't like the Scouts onto it, or they don't embrace that culture enough. And when Liverpool lose that, Liverpool stop being a special football club, and I think all football clubs are going that way. I think we've been more resistant to it than most. And that's the thing, that's just the double-edged sword of globalisation. You want to be a mega power, you want the financial clout to compete at the top end, you need fans all over the world spending dough, but we need to find a way to make sure that we don't lose the Scouse identity along the way, and like I said,
it's the heart of the club, isn't it, mate?
So yeah, like I say, I've got well, like, again, if that was just a question of what are your views on Liverpool fans outside the UK, it would be that would be the answer to that question. But as Machen says there, we share the passion, and that's the thing. I think the people, as I say, ultimately the people who do share the passion, because not everyone shares the passion, that'd be ridiculous. But the people who do share the passion are amazing. I absolutely fully embrace those people, because they're just us with different accents. And letters from the same alphabet sometimes, and sometimes not.
Is that the one there? Wow.
Yeah. Daniel Robson not just our opening question. I'll let you sneak two in here, just because it's a really quick one. Can you guess how many times Troop says fam in a day?
I can guess.
How many times he talks, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, the funny thing is about him, when we met him the other week, when he was talking to us before Robbie arrived, he didn't say it once.
He did.
Not to me, anyway. Not when I was just talking to him. And I think that...
Because you're not his fan.
Exactly. I think that's it. I didn't call him mate because he's not me mate. Do you know what I mean? It's just the same style of word, isn't it? Yeah. So, but as soon as Robbie turns up, the fams had popped out of a machine gun, like, do you know what I mean? But so it depends if he's, you know, if he's at a family funeral or a wedding or something. My words, hundreds of thousands. If he's just, you know, walking and talking to a bus driver or something, maybe none.
I wonder if I would say it's probably three figures. It's probably about 100 times a day, I reckon he probably says.
I know, it's like everything, but you have your good days and your bad days.
Absolutely. Okay, so this is a really good one. Andy Dunbar, Al Dunbar 91. Name your unsung hero 11, lads. Any formation, Premier League era only. So what we'll do
use this as our break.
Let's work our way through it. So we'll just talk our way through this. So is there an unsung goalkeeper? I'm not sure there is, if I'm perfectly honest. The one I'll throw out for that,
Brad Jones, because of what he went through in his life.
Yeah, yeah. The one I'd throw for it is Paul Jones, because he was an absolute... I still look at this deck, I just loved him. He was such a good goalkeeper, and we got him right at the tail end of his career for like a 3-game loan spell, and he was fine. You know, he wasn't great, but he was one of them that I genuinely... Of all the backup goalkeepers we've had over the years, he was the one that... He shouldn't be like Gary Mack-esque. If we got him a couple of seasons earlier, we could have got some really good years out of him.
Yeah.
I'm happy for both.
Marcus Babbel's the right back for me because he's just
unsung.
He just keeps getting forgotten about.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, he was integral in that treble winning season. He was amazing. He was amazing when he was at Bayern Munich, and unfortunately, he had that debilitating disease, didn't he? And couldn't do it for any longer, but he's always forgotten about.
It's crazy that, because I never forget about him, because I agree with you, genuinely sensational. I suppose by the same token, almost like the Rob Jones probably comes into it as well, because I'm going to film my side with Joneses.
Yeah, well, the Rob Jones thing, I think he's more forgotten about because he was just 8 years, 9 years before or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think Liverpool fans who watched Liverpool in the 90s will realise just how old Rob Jones was. But yeah. Again, crippling injury, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, left back. Jamie Carragher. Not Jamie Carragher, the centre-half. He was world class. Jamie Carragher, the left back. I like that.
Stig Ingebjørnby.
Okay. Is your staple left back shout as our stick?
Yeah, I think it's only really since we started doing the stats and stuff like that. I mean, the guy had like mid 30s assists from left back. So, yeah, that's probably my show for
it. Okay, so centre halves then.
Honcho.
Stefan Honcho, 100% Stefan Honcho. Absolutely single handedly handed us an FA Cup, which was incredible. The Arsenal fan, I was funnily enough speaking of Troops, he came up and we were doing Wheel of Wank, which is out this week on Retro. He still hates Stefan Honcho for the 2001 FA Cup final. Partnered by,
I don't know whether he really is an unsung hero, but John Scales. I always liked John Scales. But whether he's an unsung hero or not, I'm not 100% sure. I thought he was good.
Sotirios Kyriakos, the Greek god.
I think he was a cult hero, not an unsung hero, yeah. If I'm honest.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a cult hero as well, isn't he, though?
But yeah, he wasn't unsung, was he, now? Okay, let's go to, let's just say 4-4-2 for the sake of argument. Left wing.
Kennedy. Mark Kennedy.
Fuck off, he was just shit.
He was rapid though, wasn't he?
If you're having Mark Kennedy, I'm Mark Gonzalez. He was rapid, wasn't he?
Mark Kennedy had it though. He had a good left foot. Like, and no, do you know what? No, he's not an unsung hero. He's an unfilled potential left winger.
He was terrible.
Left winger, unsung. Oyvind Leonardsson.
I was going to say Oyvind Leonardsson.
Scored some goals.
Did score a few goals.
Scored some really good goals for us and some really important goals.
Albert Riera.
Yeah, that's a good shout as well.
Yeah.
Did his job for the team.
Absolutely.
Completely unsung.
Completely. Right wing then. David Thompson.
Yeah. You know what? That's a fair shout for David Thompson.
I thought
you were going Richie Partridge then.
Get lost, Richie.
Maybe because of our CM.
I love Richie
CM,
Partridge.
CM, I'm going to go down with the kids. Yeah, save.
Yeah. Who did we say? Me and Brace has gone a complete blank there. Who did we say?
You said, hang on, let's go backwards.
Wow.
I said Richie Partridge and you said, Tom?
David Thompson. There we go.
David Thompson.
Yeah. My only overriding memory of David Thompson is an assist that he played for a goal we never scored. And it was Man United, I think we drew 2-2 at Anfield and Paul Lynch scored the equaliser. And when we went mental, I remember running over the couches in my living room, running around in a circle. And he then played this like 45-yard cross-field cross to Paul into the back post and he put it wide and it was like it would have been the greatest assist of the season and it never went. That's like literally my only memory of David Thompson, but yeah, he was
so I've got my centre back partner. It's definitely not going to be yours and you'll know this story but no one else will. Zach Whitbread.
The man you could have been.
Well, I could have been Zach Whitbread, yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know the story, my mum was married to Barry Whitbread, who's Zach Whitbread's dad. He was a scout for Liverpool. And so essentially, yeah, I could have been Zach Whitbread. Unfortunately, I wasn't, and I'm not.
Well, safe, unfortunately?
Yeah, I would have kind of liked to play for Liverpool.
True.
Maybe with some of them Whitbread jeans.
I don't think he's had the longevity though. I'm not sure what he's doing. He's still playing. He's probably still going. If you know what Zach Whitbread's up to, let us know.
He's essentially my brother.
Okay. centre mids.
Is Paul Ince allowed?
Yeah, if you want to put Paul Ince in the Liverpool team,
Well, he was first and foremost. I supported him when he was there. He had one of those unbelievable records when. And if him and Jamie Redknapp played together, they were like unbeaten for so long when they first started out together. But I think it was across the course of maybe 2 years because, you know, they were just both so unfit all the time. Like, he came in and did a job for that team. You know, we needed leadership at the time. I think he'd been to Inter Milan after Manchester United beforehand, hadn't he? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a player that I enjoyed watching because he's the type of player that I like. You know, people who get stuck in, who fight and die, and almost fucking die for the cause and all that. So I kind of like Paul Ince.
Yeah, I always thought that was a bit of a sham with regards to him. I thought, yeah, he carried that. The governor thing, it was like he created this persona for himself, but never... A Liverpool player didn't seem to back it up. It was the FA Cup game when he went off injured and fucking they said after him, I don't expect my captain to go off that, and we threw it away, didn't we, as a result. But I think he's probably on the fringes of unsung or something because he was technically in the best midfield in the world song. But Momo Sissoko, for me, two or three seasons where he was just, he started off and we were like, what the fuck have we bought here? It just gangly and weird and couldn't, you know, offered absolutely nothing in an attacking sense whatsoever. And then we found this little balance where he just did the midfields running for them. You know, he was just, for like Vizabi and Stevie, he'd just be like, go and retrieve the football for them and bring it back. And
like a lapdog.
Exactly. Like he was like, go on, Momo. And he'd just go like, he'd go off and go, like, pass the ball back to Stevie. He'd go, good lad, Momo. Go on, sit back for a second. I'm going forward. He was the least, like, for a defensive midfielder, which he technically was, he was never, you know, he was ne- you would never say... He
was very Sacho, actually, wasn't he? That's what I seem to.
Yeah, a bit ungainly. Well, you've definitely.
I don't think he should be unsung because he was in that.
But I just by comparison.
I was talking about him on the Ball Street pod yesterday. Really? Funnily enough, because they asked me about one of the questions was pointed towards that, and Flav went. I thought you'd say Momo Sissoko, and the reason I gave to Flav on that was I can't because I just remember that kick up in the air against Manchester United, and that was just. I just can't get past that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember any of the good stuff that he did because all I think about is you are so crap.
Yeah.
You've accidentally kicked the ball 25 yards
up. That was the point where he got his eye injury, didn't he? And when he came back, he was just never the same player again. I don't know what that was, whether it was a fear thing or just a
perception thing. I'll accept him for the hardships that's gone through.
Well, it's that thing, as I say, even though as his technically name was sung in that song, of that midfield... of the Gerard Alonso Mascherano, he did so much of the dirty work for those lads that, yeah, by comparison to all that, definitely. There's probably some better tackle options, but in terms of time, please do keep suggestions coming in. But we'll move to the centre-forwards then. Unsung heroes, centre-forward.
Titi Kamara, but he was a cult. So yeah. He's the guy that I gave yesterday on the podcast.
Karl-Heinz Riedler.
Yeah. Not at Liverpool.
Yeah. He was that season where people forget he played for Liverpool because it was only, I think it was only 1 year we got out of him. But Fowler started that season injured, and that's when Michael Owen burst onto the scene. And he was, I have no doubt in my mind, Michael Owen was as good in the air as he was because he played with Karl-Heinz Riedler for a year. Because he was astounding for the little fella, and the way he held the ball up and the way he used it. I did once see him control a ball with his throat, which I wouldn't recommend. But yeah, I would happily see a better inclusion than Karl-Heinz Riedler.
I am going to go with a player that everybody forgets that we signed, Nicholas Anelka.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I'm
should have fucking signed for us properly. 6 month loan spell, not enough.
Yeah,
and went on to show that he was still a good player for many, many years afterwards. And yeah. It's such a shame he didn't sign.
No, absolutely ludicrous. Okay, so we'll go with that. We could work on.
He's a good shout as well if you let him, because again he was a bit part player to those. Fowler and Owen,
yeah,
wasn't he?
I suppose you're right. That's a decent one. Right, we've got loads more questions. We'll have to do some of these on the video section of things, just in terms of this not being a 3-hour podcast. One last question then. MVLFC 1995. Name one player in the current Liverpool team that you could see at the club 8 to 10 years on.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
It's literally Trent Alexander-Arnold, isn't it? That's pretty much it. The rest. You're only looking at the other guys along those lines, and that so much of that would. I just think it's the scouts factor, isn't it? The fact that he's a local lad, it will always play into his hands in that regard. I would hope that we're talking about Ryan Brewster and we're talking about Shea Ojo and whatever, but he's young enough that we've not seen enough of him. So he exists in potential as much as anything else, and again the fact that he's from West Derby. I think helps as well, but yeah. Other than that, again, it's just the age thing, isn't it? When you consider everyone else,
I could put a case forward for Origi, but he's got to do it. He's got to do it soon.
Yeah,
you know. And if he does do it soon, then I can see it. But right now, I don't think I can see it because I've not seen him do it.
Yeah, exactly. All of those. I think it's an unfortunate situation where we're hopefully. It's the thing. Hopefully, in terms of how Liverpool are being restructured, and hopefully in terms of the fact that Klopp and his boys are having more of an influence on the profile of the players that we're bringing in at the academy, that we're bringing in from outside, that there will be a more robust crop of players coming through. I think, you know, I think we've seen it from the likes of Kev Stewart and your Brannigans, etc., where you've got a lot of slight lads mm-hmm. who. Slight lads who aren't particularly pacey or very technically gifted, whereas we could do with some guys who are athletes first and foremost, yeah. And then you add the skills on top. I think we'd be more inclined to see that. Just as I say, I can't think of anyone recently.
Do you know the only other one, and it's a bit of a harebrained one? Manninger could end up as a coach for many years for us.
Yeah, that could be a shout. And the only other one, I guess, and it's maybe not 10, maybe 8.
And that'd be a stretch.
Henderson, yeah. You know, if he proves himself to be good at what he does. If he doesn't lose too much of his physicality, then it could be.
I think, you know, I could envision a scenario in 10 years' time whereby we're talking about Jordan Henderson, like Man United fans talk about Michael Carrick.
And, you know, again, on that regard, like eight, because he's a bit older, eight's probably a stretch, but like a Lallana, wouldn't it be lovely? Mm. As you said, like, you know, you've got these, like Man United, you've got these guys playing until the 36, 37. If Adam Lallana keeps himself in good shape, he's not got too much pace to lose. He could just be that, you know,
but he could still lose it.
Well, no, like that old cultured head to have it in and around the squad would be lovely. So yeah, we've got one more thing that we're gonna do before we wrap up. As I say, we touched on it at the start. Chris was really impressed with the Christmas game sensation that is Speak Out. For those of you who've never seen it play, I mean, obviously there's just YouTube for this. If you want to see us do this,
which you won't,
which you can, the RedBirdTV.com. If you watched it already, hiya. We're gonna get these things out now. We're gonna give a go. I have no idea how this is gonna work in audio form. So how much of the podcast we dedicate to this is soon to be decided.
Yeah. I think we're gonna have to get something to put over the microphones and make sure that we sit back a bit, because dribble and choose sometimes. I've not done it, but my mum dribbled uncontrollably when she was in the middle of this.
Wow. Okay. What are we doing?
So, what I'm going to do from now on in is I'm going to read out the questions to you, and you've got to try and answer the questions. Right.
Okay, so we'll do one of these on the podcast.
Okay. Liverpool star Christian Ziga to Middlesbrough in 2000. Which player was called to Middlesbrough in 1999?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Not really. Liverpool side, Kiki Ziga, from Middlesbrough in 2000. Which player was called to Middlesbrough in 1999?
We signed Christian Ziga from Middlesbrough
in 1999.
Yeah. Which player was sold to Middlesbrough
in 1999?
In 1999. Which player was Paul Ince?
That is the correct answer.
Yeah. Oh my God! Right. Okay. Go on. I'll have a go at this.
These aren't as bad as. Well, they're not as good as the other ones, which I should probably expect that, to be honest. From what you're talking about. Let's see you, Paul.
On which ground has Liverpool won two European...
Cups?
Can you say it again?
On which ground... And Liverpool won two European Cups.
European Cups. Stadio Olimpico.
Correct. Stadio Olimpico. That's dreadful. Right, okay. Right, so yeah, we'll wrap up. We will leave you there, podcast listeners. Thank you very much for tuning in this week. I genuinely don't know what that will come out like. Let us know what you thought we shout. Don't. Thanks for listening. As always, we're obviously this podcast is now available on iTunes. If you would be so kind, please give it a 5-star rating and leave a review as well. That would be genuinely magnificent. If you've done it before, then review episode by episode. How do you think that, how did this one stand up? Did you enjoy that monstrosity? Let us know. And I say, if you enjoy the podcast and you want some more of it every single week, you can go to the redmentv.com, where we do this in video form with an extra 10 minutes or so, plus three exclusive shows where we talk about the match that's just gone. We do Reds news and Chris looks into the Liverpool stats and tactics as well ahead of the game. So yeah, if you're leaving us on the podcast, thanks very much for listening. Walk on.
Thank you very much for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure. Don't forget to rate and review and caution.
So just to clarify, we do have plastic things in our mouths. This is not just us being horrendously offensive.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please do look up, speak out, and be back here next week for the Red Men TV podcast.